Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Welcome to Stone Cold Stros. I'm Brandon Strange with Charlie Palillo and Josh Jordan. You can find them on X at Palillo and at JoshJordan975. And in between podcast episodes here, you can read their blogs covering all things Houston sports over on our flagship site, sportsmap.com. On today's episode, the walking wounded Stros prove that they can give it as good as they can take. But does Houston have the arsenal to survive this gauntlet of games? I know two guys who will probably have a big say in it, but which one of them is Houston's quarter season MVP? We'll toss that around next. So guys, baseball is an enigma wrapped in a riddle, stitched in red twine. Like if I told you the Reds were going to come to Daikin and score 13 runs over their series with Houston, you would assume that two of those games against Cincinnati weren't shutouts. And prior to that, the Astros were 6-15 when scoring three or fewer runs, 12-3 when scoring four or more. So, of course, Houston wins the series opener 3-0, only to get 9 runs in the second game and lose. Shout out to Brian McTaggart, who compiled those stats. But winning the series against the Reds was a much needed bit of good news for Houston that has seemingly been under a barrage of negative headlines as of late. Jordan already on the IL, Wesneski to the IL, Altuve pulled with the sore hammy, Lance McCullers gets shelled in the second start back, and then he's getting death threats. Charlie, I texted you after the Wesneski and Altuve news, and I just said, this team's cooked. And you said, nah. Would you like to elaborate?
No. That would make for an extremely short podcast, wouldn't it? Long season, right? The tide's going to ebb, the tide's going to flow. And even with the injury stacking, as we discussed some last week, the Astros don't miss Jordan at his level of performance in 2025. And the Astros, short term at least, won't miss Jose Altuve at his level of performance thus far in 2025. The Wesneski news is a downer because who among us or consuming us isn't thinking, oh boy, is 2026 the next time we're going to see Hayden Wesneski on the mound? But welcome to life in the American League, a mosh pit of mediocrity. Toronto Blue Jays go in and sweep the Mariners in Seattle over the weekend. So the Astros, 20-19, screamingly average. They're two games out of first place in the division. They're one half game behind Alex Bregman and the Red Sox for the third wild card. And the Astros are in a five-team cluster of teams separated by half game. A game. The Twins, who won 8 in a row. The Texas Rangers are also good pitch, bad hit. The Blue Jays getting back up to .500. So it's going to be at least a one-front war, the wild card picture. Because even incurring injuries, I just have a hard time seeing the Astros free falling to a level where they're not in the wild card race in September. And the Mariners sent up a reminder to those who need it. They're no superpower. They played fantastic baseball for the better part of a month after their 4-8 start. But they're not going to win 96 games and have the Astros and Rangers and Athletics, speaking of teams right there in the wild card mix and division mix at this point, so far in Seattle's rear view mirror that you're thinking, oh boy, lost cause.
Yeah, I think the big thing is the Astros are starting to hit, and we've been waiting for it to happen, but it's going down now. You know, if you look at their stats for the season, they're bottom third in almost every category. But if you look over the last 15 games, they're fourth in OPS, sixth in slugging, seventh in runs scored, even fifth and double, something we've been waiting for them to do all year is get some extra base hits. So it's starting to happen, and it's kind of what we thought it would be. You look at Christian Walker last 7 games, .385 average, .500 slugging. And of course, Yiner Diaz breaking out over his last 7 games. He's slugging .448. Over his last 15 games, he's slugging .559. So the heart of the order is starting to get it done. and the Astros are seeing some results.
Yeah, the Walker-Diaz tandem was definitely the offensive highlight of the weekend. Walker reaching base 8 times in the 3 games. Yiner 2-for-4, 2-for-4, 1-for-5 in the 3rd game. But it was the 3-run homer that opened up the rubber game of the series. And Yiner even worked in a walk over the weekend, his 4th of the season. Those are the two guys who are supposed to add the ballast to the heart of the order, the middle third of the order with Yordan. So trend up, take it. And I do want to mention Isak Paredes, who keeps on trucking and walking, right? Yep. The Astros cross the quarter mark of the season with the Tuesday night game against the Royals. Isak Paredes is on pace to draw nearly 100 walks this season, starting the week with an on-base percentage of .380. That's outstanding for anyone and of extreme value when it comes from a guy most typically batting 2nd in the lineup.
And it's so consistent. I mean, he might go down 0-2, but he's never out of account. He just is so locked in and will grind out at-bats. And to exemplify your point, Charlie, Houston goes 4-6 over their last 10 and gain ground in the AL West. Now, Arrigetti, speaking of the walking wounded here, Arrigetti not expected to return from his broken thumb until probably early June. Wesneski goes to the IL with that sore elbow. And remember, this is after they gave him some rest days because they saw the drop in velo, which, you know, if we want to get into the Astros questionable medical staff, that's certainly always a fun topic for debate. And now we have a major hiccup in Lance McCullers' return. Taylor Scott is sporting a 6 ERA out of the pen. Now, Fromber and Diesel, however, have been good this year. Blanco goes 8 shutty versus the Reds, which completely bails out a spot after the McCullers McMeltdown. We know they're currently in the stretch of 17. Do you think Houston has enough pitching depth to successfully navigate this marathon right now?
Given the field of battle in which they toil, the American League, the American League West. If the Astros were in the National League West, they'd be close to a goner. They certainly would be already out of the division race as a practical matter, with the Dodgers in there and the Padres in there and the Giants not tailing off yet. But you play your course. Yeah, it heightens the challenge in the midst of 17 consecutive games. Opportunity knocks. We've already seen A.J. Bluebaugh. It'll be lefty Colt Gordon, who's not some young phenom. He's 26 years old and off to a solid start at Sugarland this season. So call him up, right? Spot starters are part of the deal for all teams over 162 games. So yeah, they can hang. We do know the Astros in June have another stretch where they play 13 consecutive games. In July, they have a stretch where they play 13 consecutive games again. And then overlapping August and September, there's a stretch where they play 23 games in 24 days. So that long, long grind of a baseball season tests all staffs. No, this one won't be confused with the 2019 Astros fronted by peak Verlander and chased by peak Gerrit Cole. But there's enough. And you mentioned Ronel Blanco. That was the biggest pitching development of the weekend. Going 8, you mentioned after the Saturday fiasco. And we're still early enough in the season that stats can make great leaps forward or tumbles downward. Blanco, 1 game against the Reds. ERA goes from 4.98 to 4.04. He can knock that down to the 350 to 375 range and pitch to that consistently. That'll slot very nicely in, say, the number 3 spot, maybe the number 4 spot if they get enough bodies healthy in a rotation that still remains the foremost strength of this ball club.
Yeah, and the bullpen has been spectacular too. And I mean, what can you say about those guys? Okert, Hader, Abreu, and King all have an ERA of 159 or lower. I mean, that's incredible. So the bullpen's doing their job, that's for sure. The Wesneski thing's kind of a bummer, right? Because they're going to have to be really cautious with him now. And once again, Astros have faced criticism for bringing guys back too soon. And Wesneski, they just gave him a few extra days rest and put him back out there. If I remember correctly, I think he had like a 30-pitch inning in that start when he returned, something that taxes the arm, obviously. So that's disappointing that the Astros took that risk with him. We'll see if he's able to come back. Last year, he missed some time with the forearm strain, and now he's having elbow issues. So that's not a good sign. I think my biggest issue with McCullers is just he's just so wild. In both his starts, he's walked at least 3 guys and hit a batter. So at the end of the day, he's got to be able to throw some strikes. And it's not like he throws 97 miles an hour anymore. Guys can go up there and just kind of not swing and make him come in the zone. So that's the biggest thing with McCullers I'm worried about. He's just wild. He's got to get that under control.
And as we discussed last week, his one fully healthy season, almost fully healthy season as a starter, he led the league in bases on balls issued. So it's just part of who he is. A fastball at 91, 92 with his command issues just will not play. So Lance McCullers, it has to be hope, reasonably so, more than optimism or expectation that he's going to settle in and be a solid member of this starting rotation.
Yeah, I really want to talk about him right now, but I think we probably need to wait and see, let the sample size open up a little bit before we really dig into him. Because, I mean, right now, I don't want to be a victim of the moment and overreact, but it's obviously not great after the first two starts back.
But what we should hit on briefly, whoever the idiot or idiots were Saturday, I don't care if you're a fake internet tough guy, just a total loser. You're obviously a coward. Or a sociopath, or both of the above. And there's some gray area. I'm not expert on the law on where this classifies, misdemeanor A, misdemeanor B. But I think it's in play, a year in jail and a fine of like $4,000. I'm for the max. Just the coarseness of society, you know, whether you had the under on Reds runs in the game. I don't care. There just need to be some basic, better moral standards in the world at large, but certainly online, and bringing the kids in, whatever's 2-3 levels below despicable, that's you, you loser. You're criminal.
Amen to that. Let's shift into something a little bit more positive, though. That's Jeremy Pena. He has had an excellent season to this point, just under 40 games. His batting average, on-base percentage and slug are higher than it's been for his career. He's striking out less per nine. We've seen Pena explode for stretches, obviously none more famous or infamous than the 2022 postseason. Do you guys think this is just another one of those concentrated bursts of production from Pena, or do you sense that JP3 has found something in his game?
Clearly something's changed. He's swinging at pitches that aren't in the dirt and in the batter's box for a left-handed hitter. That's a huge part of this. He's able to use that speed. We're seeing the power coming back when he does get a fastball, first pitch fastball. He can put it in the Crawford boxes again. So it's encouraging to see. And, you know, I went back and looked at his stats. In 2022 as a rookie, he actually slugged .426. So the slugging was pretty good, but his on-base percentage was terrible at .289. So as we're seeing, he's at .345 on base percentage now. So he has definitely cleaned something up in his game. We knew the power was there. We weren't seeing it consistently. He's spitting on sliders in the dirt. And you could see it. Confidence is a big part of it, too. He's just a lot more confident now. Awesome to have him at the top of the order. And he's made a huge difference for this team, because if he wasn't this good to start the season, like him and Jake Myers, imagine where this offense would be with all these other guys taking so long to heat up.
At 27 years old, this really was the time, season number 4, for Jeremy Pena to make that leap if he's going to make the leap. And I think from an Astros fan positivity perspective, you should buy into it. But when you also dig on some of the numbers, his strikeout rate is 15% lower. Not an amazing drop, but a consequential drop when coupled with his walk rate being up 70% from last season. But frankly, it was pathetic and it had almost nowhere to go but up. But 70% is way up. That said, let's go with Roger Reality as opposed to Debbie Downer. I went and looked this up and it actually caught me by surprise. His first 39 games, that's where Pena was through Sunday. And by the way, playing every game and playing superior defense. First quarter of the season, he's the second best shortstop in the American League to Bobby Witt Jr., the best who's here at the front of the week with the Royals. Witt's on his own level. Pena's next best in class. The rookie Jacob Wilson's hitting almost .350 with the A's, but he never walks, little power, and do it for more than a month, kid. So 39 games in, Jeremy Pena is playing at an elite level. Well, the first 39 games he played last season, he played at a much more elite level than this. First 39 games last season, Jeremy Pena was batting .345 with an OPS of .870. I mean, that blows away what he's done so far this season. Then his next 39 games played, Jeremy Pena stunk like rotten eggs and then some. OPS of 513, batting average in the low 200s for the exact same span of games that he was better than this Jeremy Pena the first 39 games of last season. So it's just the reality of the deal over 162 games. That's where the proof will be in the pudding. Bad players can go off for a while. Great players can go into a funk for a while. Where does the water settle? I think the trend line on Jeremy Pena for this season is in the positive direction, but that he's now established as a superstar, no, not yet.
But if he could be, if he can be this player for them, how consequential would it be to this team who is in desperate need of another franchise tentpole?
Well, it's massive. They have their leadoff hitter in perpetuity, as much as we would judge it within baseball. Right? This Jeremy Pena is obviously better than current Jose Altuve. Frankly, it's better than last year's Jose Altuve because Pena is so much better on the bases. Though he needs to kick it up a notch. Emerald still use that. If he wants to make a run at those 50 stolen bases, right? He's at 6 a quarter of the way through the season. But this Jeremy Pena is a worthy American League All-Star. He'd never been that kind of player before.
Yeah, I think part of it, too, is that he's leading the Astros in so many categories. That's probably why we think what he's doing is even more amazing, because a lot of the other guys, it just haven't happened for Yordan yet. Now, Altuve's been scuffling. So you look at Pena, hey, highest slugging percentage on the team, and he has the most home runs on the team. But if he was on another team, that probably wouldn't be the case.
Well, and let me throw in that starting the week, Witt Jr.'s head and shoulders, Jeremy Pena is next best. There are 10 American League shortstops who played enough to qualify in the rate statistics, the non-quantity statistics, batting average, on base percentage, etc. Witt Jr.'s first, Pena's second among the 10, 10th among the 10, which I believe is dead last, Carlos Correa. Return on investment, advantage Astros, so far in 2025.
Great tie-in there. So right now we're a quarter of the way through the season. Jeremy Pena is the team's most reliable bat. Hunter Brown is Houston's ace. At this point, they are far and away Houston's two MVP candidates. Who do you give the nod to?
I go Brown at this level, a mid-ones earned run average. He hadn't met the definition of quality start in every start, but he hadn't had a bad start. I mean, basically, he's had one bad inning, the first inning in Chicago where he gave up three runs. So I'm fine going the other way, Josh, if you want it. But the first quarter MVP for the Astros, and if not front runner, right there in the American League Cy Young race, first quarter of the season, Hunter Brown.
Yeah, I think Hunter Brown's been more spectacular, but I think this team needs Pena more because the Astros have a lot of good pitching. Mm-hmm. They haven't had a lot of good hitting this year, especially with Yordan going down and Tuve not playing very well. They've needed Pena to step up and give this offense some juice. So I'll go towards Pena, though. I will admit Hunter Brown's been more spectacular at his job. But like I said, Astros have lots of pitching. It's the offense where they need some help. And even after that debacle with McCullers, I mean, the Astros are still, you know, really – they dropped all the way down to eighth in ERA after that huge blow-up game, but they're still first in whip, second in batting average against. So the pitching has been elite all season. It's the offense where they've kind of struggled even just to be middle of the pack.
Yeah, fundamentally, it's the issue, just like league awards at the end of the season. How do you balance the value of a starting pitcher, as phenomenal as he may be? Well, it's one every five games or six games when you're in a six-man rotation versus the player who posts almost every day, or in Pena's case to this point in the season, every day.
Yeah, look, Hunter Brown's tool bag right now is the stuff to get you generationally wealthy. But as far as need on this team right now, he's the best of a lot of good pitchers, whereas Jeremy Pena is kind of an oasis in the middle of a desert production right now with guys like Yordan and Altuve and Yiner scuffling for the first quarter of the season. And thankfully he's woken up. Christian Walker coming here and forgetting how to hit all of a sudden. What Jeremy Pena has done and hitting daily being able to contribute on a day in, day out basis, I think tips the award in my favor. So I'm going to give it to Pena as well. Just a quick message. If you're interested in advertising your service or product on this show, you can contact our friends on the sales team at houston.sportsmap.com/advertise. The link is in our description. And one last reminder, if you listen on podcasts on apps like Apple or Spotify, give us a 5-star rating. We do appreciate it. Next scheduled episode drops on Thursday, so make sure you're subscribed. And we also drop emergency episodes as news breaks, so make sure your notifications are on. Thanks for listening. For Charlie and Josh, I'm Brandon saying so long, and until next time, go Stros.
And that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.